The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome to our top stories this hour. We have an awful lot to do. And as you know, the story has bothered me greatly from the very beginning. For the 2 months when they were looking for the hit-and-run driver who killed Greg Moore, a 53-year-old man, husband, father, about to be a grandfather. He was doing the healthiest of activities, going out for an early Sunday 15-mile run when he was hit and killed and left in a ditch. There's an update to all of this. Let's get right to our big lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
As you know, we talked with Greg's widow about the accident, and when she heard that it was intentional, then I don't even know how you process that sort of thing.
All I know is these two individuals stated that it was intentional, but the really chilling detail is from the family member that overheard these people talking about the crime and laughing about the way that Greg went up in the air when he was hit.
So this 15-year-old girl, as soulless as a human being can get, hit the guy at 50 miles an hour, according to a family member, laughed about it after killing this man. And now we have some new information. It came down as breaking news while I was on the air yesterday that they are now looking for a second victim that this girl may have committed a hit and run against, because one of her either friends or family members in the car video recorded her hitting another guy who is believed to have lived but may have had serious injuries. And it's just unthinkable to me still that this 15-year-old is going to be charged as a juvenile. And the maximum punishment for murdering somebody, if indeed she is found guilty of murder, that the maximum penalty would be just a little over 5 years if they hold her until she's 21 years old. Well, there is somebody who's trying to do something about that. King County Councilman Reagan Dunn has asked for a review by the prosecutor's office of the juvenile charges against this 15-year-old girl. Reagan Dunn joins us live here on the Dory Monson Show. Reagan, always good to talk to you, sir.
Good afternoon, Dory. Thanks for having me on.
Why have you taken an interest in this case?
Well, it's interesting. Of course, I've been very involved in the investigation side of it from pretty early on because it occurred in my district. And as a former prosecutor, as prosecutor of several jurisdictions across the country, I've been interested in the standard for reviewing the matter in adult court versus juvenile court. And on balance, Dory, I thought until these new facts, I thought, yeah, boy, that's a close call, but I think maybe juvenile court's more appropriate. Heinous crime, to be sure. But then I learned, as the public did as well, through both public and private sources, that this same individual allegedly has done this at least one other time under very similar circumstances. And for me, I am very, very concerned because it shows a continuing pattern of predatory behavior and absolutely heinous acts of just using the vehicle to kill people or attempt to kill people, allegedly. And so I am now asking the prosecutor to review this if it is inappropriate for adult court as opposed to juvie.
Okay, and I talked with Casey McNerthney at the prosecutor's office last week about this, and what he said is that it is almost automatic. Doesn't matter if it's a girl or a boy, doesn't matter if they are black or white. He said it is almost automatic that crimes like this just be referred to the juvenile court. Is that true?
Well, it just depends what kind of prosecutor you are and if you have the courage to take on a challenging case like this. I mean, state law, RCW 13.40, allows, you know, the prosecutor to seek a hearing to have the alleged perpetrator moved into an adult court. And there's a couple of standards for when that can happen. One is if the juvenile perpetrator is in danger. For example, if they're in a juvie situation and they're getting beat up or something and they need to be moved into a federal system, that's one place where it can be done. The other is if it's in the best interest of the community. And here, right here in King County, you have somebody who's allegedly mowed down at least a couple of people, perhaps more, with you know, obvious intent. It's not just intent. It's insidious. And that is exactly the kind of case where the adult sentencing is appropriate. And here's why. If you have this very short time span where they're going to be in a juvenile system, a minimum security style system, and then they're back out on the street again, I don't want to see my friends and neighbors in King County running down the side of the road or at a street fair or at a gas station and be subject to somebody with this propensity. And so adult court seems appropriate to me.
Well, I'm reminded of that gang of children that kicked and beat Tuba Man to death many years ago. I'm sure you remember that. The guy mm-hmm. who would play outside of the Seattle Center Coliseum and the Kingdom. And they kicked him to death. I mean, it was so heartless. And this was the sweetest man, developmentally disabled man, who I've visited with so many times on my way in and out of sporting events. And he was just the sweetest guy you'll ever imagine. And they kicked him to death. And they all got a slap on the wrist. And at least one of them, upon getting out, committed murder. It may have been even more than one. I don't remember. This is all off the top mm-hmm. of my head. But yeah, I mean, and their thing, Reagan, is 15-year-olds today aren't the 15-year-olds of when you and I were kids, and neither are the 13 and 14-year-olds for that matter. And it seems like the laws haven't caught up with how much more violent our teenagers have gotten.
Yeah, well, in fact, the laws have gone the other way. There has been a systemic attempt to decriminalize everything, particularly related to juveniles. There are very few things in the world that you can do these days as a 17-year-old where you're going to get in trouble. And I got to tell you something, 15, 16, and 17-year-olds, as you have just noted, can be very, very dangerous. You have a situation here where somebody is a clear, in my opinion, alleged danger to the community. And that needs to be met with justice. And not just, you know, justice for Michelle, who is now a widow, yep. or justice for the community. Justice to make sure that our community is safe. The theory of prosecution, Dory, is deterrence. And we have to begin to take cases like this and others seriously. And if you look at the specific facts of this case specifically, I think you'll find that it meets the statutory requirements for removal to adult court. And I think that is a just result under the set of circumstances.
We're talking with King County Councilman Reagan Dunn. Okay, you cited, I wrote it down, RCW 13.40. I'm not familiar with that. You are a former prosecutor. What hurdles would have to be cleared if Dan Satterberg were to change his mind and say, yes, I am going to prosecute this girl as an adult?
Well, you have to have an evidentiary hearing under 13.41.10. And the prosecutor needs to show sets of facts that make it appropriate to move it to adult court. And in that case, it's got to be a violent offense of some kind. You have that here. And it's got to be in the best interest of the community as well to do that. And so I think given the limited sentencing range for juvenile court, given the limited amount of time this person would be removed from the community, and what we have is a continuing pattern of predatory behavior here, that it meets the criteria for the court to treat it as an adult case. And, you know, Dan is saying, I think, and then I'm talking about news reports now, that he doesn't believe that the judges will do that. Well, you know what? My response is, well, let's try and let's see. And let's put this on a judge. We know that the murder rate will be the all-time murder rate in King County this year.
Right.
All time. We know that shootings are at record high. We know that this community is far less safe. And I hate to bring it into a broader public policy because every case needs to be fact specific, but this is an indicator case. It's an indicator of a larger issue. Are we going to take people who kill people seriously or are we not? And this, along with gang violence and other things, are the kinds of things we have to take seriously. If we don't draw a line here, then where do we draw it?
Okay, so let me play defense attorney here. So this is what the prosecutor's office told me. The girl claims that she only intended to bump him at 50 miles an hour, but did not intend to kill him. Now, the prosecutor's going to come in. Defense attorney's going to come in and say that that's just the workings of a really stupid, undeveloped juvenile mind, that she thinks she could have just bumped him, but she really didn't mean to kill the guy, even though she was going 50 miles an hour. And is that a defense that the prosecutor's office fears it could work? What do you say?
Well, first of all, you know, everybody's going to have a defense, and it shouldn't matter what the defense is, whether or not this case is brought, attempted to be brought to adult court. It is a leadership issue relating to justice. Are you going to lead, and are you going to give it your best shot and make all the arguments with respect to that? And maybe that argument made sense when you got a single count, but now you have multiple attempts. So the other thing is, it doesn't necessarily need to be, in at least in my reading of the statute, that you intended to use the car to kill somebody. The felony murder doctrine says that if you kill somebody while you're committing another felony,
on
the hook for murder.
Yes.
It's the felony murder doctrine. So you got to make the arguments. If you don't bring it to court to a judge and make the arguments, then what's the point? That's the whole idea behind the justice system, and ultimately a jury will make the determination, as well as a judge in this process, if it's brought to adult court. I hope that's what happens.
If she were to be charged as an adult and the jury says we will not convict her of murder as an adult, would she walk free immediately? Would they have any options beyond that?
Yeah, there's lesser included offenses that can also, you can charge her homicide. You can do other stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, I just think that, where is justice best going to be served, given all of the protections we have within our system? Juveniles are afforded special protection, and I get that, and that's really important. Like, most of the time, you really want to leave. Juveniles have bad judgment. But if your judgment's so bad that you're mowing people down, allegedly, on the streets multiple times, and that's a different issue. It's an issue of community safety, and we have to take that very seriously.
Well, look, we had a story yesterday or the day before that two 14, 15-year-olds carjacked somebody. They found a 13-year-old in the back seat with a gun in his waistband. He was released to his mom. A 13-year-old run around with a gun, a wannabe or actual gangbanger. And then on the flip side, which you referenced a few minutes ago, Reagan, we have this no youth jail crowd, which sounds like Dow Constein's on board with. And I've talked with them, and I've said, if a 17-year-old commits murder, commits rape, do you believe they should not be punished? And they said, well, that's so rare. But ultimately, they said, yes, we believe if you are under 18 and you commit any crime, there should be no youth jail. And we've got some politicians who are actually moving us in that direction.
Oh, heavily. The policy of King County is zero youth incarceration. That's the official policy against my vote. Look, we are a country, as they say, a country of laws, not of men. What they mean by that is we need to follow the law. And if the law says that when you hold somebody up with a gun, whether you're 13, 15, or 53, or you kill somebody and break their skull because you're running down at 50 miles an hour, you have to follow the law. And if we don't follow the law, you get into the slippery slope. And that slippery slope looks like what you're seeing today. Highest murder rate in state history in King County. It just goes on and on and on. You must hold people accountable. As hard as it is for our community, our society, and some on the left, folks must be brought to justice. And that's what needs to happen here with the perpetrator in the very tragic Greg Moore case.
Okay, last thing for you. It appears in the blurry video of the second victim, which actually preceded Greg Moore, it appears that he was a white guy, Greg Moore is a white guy. My listeners have asked me, and I said something yesterday that I just want to run by you. The accused is a black girl, and they said, would they charge a hate crime here? And would they have charged differently if it was a white girl hitting black people on the side of the road? And I said, I will take the prosecutor's office at their word that they just don't see this as something that is adult court worthy. And I said, but I think there would be unbelievable civil discord if the races were reversed in this. But are there any hate crime possibilities as Dan Satterberg continued, especially in light of the second victim now?
Yeah, I mean, if there was, and I haven't seen any in that case that would indicate that at this point. But for example, if a perpetrator said just generally that I'm going to go kill people because of their race, then that is what falls into the hate crime category. If they're just out killing people and it happens to be the two victims of the same race, then that really doesn't require the additional necessity of intent. So I don't think that's the case. I certainly haven't heard anything about it. I think the reason why we have these laws are very specific. We got to enforce them. And if the elements are met like this, they should be tried in adult court.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I said yesterday. I just wanted to run it by you. Sure. Reagan, I really appreciate it. I appreciate you pursuing this. I think this absolutely should be an adult case, and we'll follow along as you try to get a response.
We'll keep working it really hard. Thanks, Dory, for your interest.
Okay, thank you. King County Councilman Reagan Dunn joining us. And as always, I would love to know what you think about all this. You can text us at 98973. It's 98973. But, you know, the other part of this equation that's left out is how does a 15-year-old child become so soulless? And there's so many other contributing factors to that, and none of those contributing factors and contributing people will be punished for it. But you rarely have a kid that just goes that wrong unless they have a lot of really bad inputs in life. Now, there are certainly cases where great parents have had kids go bad. I know of some of those. But usually it would suggest that there's been some other horrible things in this girl's life that would make her capable of seeing a jogger by the side of the road and then laugh after hitting him and sending his body flying 53 feet through the air and think that that is funny. All right. Hey, Sean, I'll wrap up early. I'll do my other stuff on the other side of the news. That is your fastest, or your big lead, I should say.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, it's called Critical Race Theory. And one local school district is pushing it hard, brainwashing kids, trying to create as much racial division as possible. Jason Rance has that story. He's going to join me next as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Well, you can imagine how thrilled I was several weeks ago when the superintendent of public instruction in our state, Chris Rakedahl, came on my show and assured me that critical race theory is not being taught in Washington State. And then you can imagine my utter dismay when I find out that absolutely critical race theory is being taught in Washington State. Our friend and colleague Jason Rance, you can hear every afternoon on 770 KTTH. He's been in contact with a school district that has been pushing this cult-like racism on our kids, and he joins us. Jason, good to talk to you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know what? I got to tell you, I know a lot of people who grew up in the Puyallup School District, and Puyallup has always seemed to be a slightly right-of-center community, and it is turning into the most radical school district in the state, or one of the most radical. Tell me about your correspondence with the folks there.
Yeah, so I found out, thanks first to a leak and then, of course, to a public disclosure request where they can't hide any of the documents, that the district actually sent out two memos basically telling the staff to deny that CRT is being taught in the classroom and then to also defend CRT. It's kind of a weird and conflicting message. It's almost like they're saying, hey, basically tell people that we're not teaching it, but if we were, this is why we love it.
Yeah.
But what's most alarming to me is that there was, at least at the Puyallup High School, and I haven't been able to confirm whether or not this document was sent out to the entire district, but at Puyallup High School, they sent out a Medium.com post that was written by an activist calling out Republicans as racist, and they're the ones who are getting in the way of CRT because they don't want to see any racial progress. So it's just very, very alarming. It's funny because they play the semantics game that so many others play on the left when it comes to CRT. They say, well, we're not teaching CRT. And that is technically correct. There's no CRT 101. They're not teaching kids basics of CRT as a legal or academic principle. Yeah. They are using the CRT lens to shape what is being taught. And in this case, how they're coming up with different policies so that they can have a quote-unquote equitable community where everyone is taught correctly and given a fair shot. But when you are choosing to view people on the basis of race, when you're choosing to judge people that way, either saying you're not getting the same access because of your identity versus, well, you, because of your privileges, have too much, well, then that's wrong by any reasonable standard.
Well, and when you say they deny that they're teaching it, but then they tell people how to answer questions about it, it just made me think of the OJ book, If I Did It, and he writes a whole book on that. So, okay, so tell me some of the things that you found out in what they are teaching in not CRT.
Yeah, so what they're basically saying is we will continue to, and this is a direct quote from one of the memos, they have a frequently asked questions part. It says, is CRT taught in Puyallup schools? They say no. We will continue to review and respond to data that reveals disparity in school discipline and achievement for the purposes of ensuring all students have opportunity to succeed in our schools. Then you've got another memo from the Washington State School Directors Association that went out to the district that says, critical race theory is not centered on blaming individuals or making anyone feel guilty. It focuses on understanding how race plays a role in how institutions like education serve people. So again, it's that we're not teaching it, but if we did, here's what it really is.
Right.
Dr. Shayla Griffin is this activist where the Puyallup High School sent out to its staff some details on why the evil right-wing racist Republicans are stopping it. And it says it's a strategy of, quote, tapping into the fears of white Americans that they will lose something if people of color are treated more fairly. She says there is an organized far-right movement to stop racial progress in our country. And she says for justice-minded people who support diversity, equity, and inclusion, there is nothing problematic about critical race theory. Now, if you are giving this to staff, and the district doesn't deny that they passed any of this on, but they do say that they teach students in nonpartisan ways. But if you are giving staff extremely partisan articles to base their issues on, their classes on, right, how is it not going to be inherently partisan?
Well, and look, this is a district that has unveiled itself to be stunningly racist and one-sided. And you know, the example that I've talked about, after the Atlanta Spa shootings, they sent out a district-wide email condemning Asian racism, even though the police in Atlanta, who talked to the shooter, said it was about a sex addiction, had nothing to do with race. After a Colorado shooting, the Puyallup School District sends out a memo. And yet when Antifa threatened to burn down the family members of, or family houses of church members because they were inviting Charlie Kirk to come speak, the Puyallup School District had nothing to say about that, even though many of their students attend that church. So they will write their political screeds about other things going on around the country, but on something involving their kids in their own backyard, if it is something that attacks the left, they are silent about that. And I find that to be absolutely despicable.
Absolutely. But remember, they're nonpartisan in everything that they do, so stop giving them a hard time. And by the way, the second that any parent will ask them about CRT, they're told in these memos that they should reframe the conversations, not have it focus on race, and instead use different terms, the kinds of terms that you and I know is just a bunch of propaganda to push away any sort of concerns, like, say, diversity, say, inclusion, say, multiculturalism. All of these memos, by the way, are available at MyNorthwest.com if you want to not just read them, but you can download them, too. I've posted them publicly so people have access to this stuff. Parents need to know that this is being given to staff in the background, so the next time you have a conversation with this district or anyone in the district you guys live in, make sure you know that these are some of the strategies that are being used, because I imagine that you're going to find probably similar memos in different districts all across the state.
Yeah, but be careful, because anybody who questions the orthodoxy is a racist.
Oh, clear. I mean, obviously. Come on. And that's Dory Monson being nonpartisan in his
exactly, and that's Jason Rance being a racist. All right, Jason, good stuff as always. People should check out the very well done in-depth story at MyNorthwest.com as well. I appreciate it, Jason.
Thank you.
All right, you can hear Jason every afternoon starting at 3 on our sister station, 770 KTTH. And we have lots more to come as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. I've had people over the years tell me, Dory, your show's changed. It's really changed a lot. Which is true. I've been doing it for 26 years. I can't even believe this. I was 33 years old. What did I know about the world? I'd never done a daily talk show, and a program director decided to take a chance on this kid. I could talk a good game. But, you know, like in the early days, we would just do silly topics, and it was an all-call-in show. So I'd lay out a topic, and then we'd fill up the phone lines, and I would take calls. And it was great for several years. And then after that, people got tired of listening to Jason on Queen Anne. Although Jason was a really cool guy, don't get me wrong. But yeah, like I remember one of the topics that I did in my early years. Who is the sexiest cartoon character? And that would jam up the phone lines. And it was kind of charming when I was 33, 34 years old to do a topic like that. But for a 59-year-old to do sexiest cartoon character, that just feel creepy to me. But what I do remember, so a lot of people called in, and they would always say that the sexiest cartoon character was this.
You don't know how hard it is being a woman looking the way I do.
Jessica Rabbit always got lots of votes as the sexiest cartoon character. Well, it turns out in this Me Too era that Jessica Rabbit is, according to Outkick.com, too much of a skank for America these days. Disney wants to give their theme park ride featuring Jessica Rabbit a makeover. The fans are not happy about it, but they said the va-va-voom version in the cartoon will remain intact, but they're going to tame it down in Disneyland's Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin ride and make it less sexy because it was just too titillating for America. So you see, I can't do topics like that anymore. That'd sound creepy. And by the way, the answer is Betty Cooper from the Archie comic books. We all know that. She was much cuter than Veronica Lodge. Okay, with all of that as mere prelude, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
And I have to admit that Big Moose's girl, Midge, with that sassy short hairdo. See how creepy that sounds from a guy my age? I could pull it off 25 years ago. Now it's... ugh. I don't want people to have to take a shower after listening to this show. Okay, let's get to our awesome audio of the day. Joe Biden, he was giving a speech at the United Nations, but right at the end, he couldn't remember the name United Nations.
Freedom, equality, opportunity, and a belief in the universal rights of all people. It's stamped into our DNA as a nation, and critically, it's stamped into the DNA of this institution, the United States.
No, you meant to say United Nations, Joe. Oh, Joe. And then there's another one. What about our allies who are upset with Biden about the absolute disaster in Afghanistan?
But of course, the environment in which he is operating isn't exactly altogether friendly towards the Biden administration right now. There are frustration from allies who saw the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan as something that the Biden administration sort of did on their own.
Oh, man, CNN is ripping Joe Biden. He's losing them even. And there's an amazing poll out today. 49% of Americans believe that Joe Biden is too incompetent to be president of the United States. 49%. And you know what that tells me? That 49% of Americans, 51%, the percentage that thinks he's competent, 51% of Americans are too incompetent to take polls. Because who in their right mind thinks he's competent? Crying out loud. Then there's Pramila Jayapal. our fine congresswoman from Seattle. Now, she sent out a tweet last night about global warming. A couple of days ago, she was tweeting about COVID and how you must wear masks. She supports fining fellow House members that don't wear a mask when they're in the House chambers. Well, last night they were in the offices of the House, and Pramila Jayapal, it was her birthday, and Rashida Tlaib was recording this video. Why is Jayapal not part of the squad, by the way? Do we know that? Nicole, why didn't she make the squad? It's Tlaib and AOC know. And...
She might be over the age limit.
Ooh, wow. Really?
I'm not sure.
Oh. Okay, I just, yeah. She seems, ideologically, she seems aligned with the squad. Anyway, Rashida Tlaib was recording the video, but Jayapal's unmasked. All the birthday party attendees are unmasked.
Hey, Pramila. Happy birthday.
You see, you should wear a mask at all parties. And I should wear a mask with members of Congress. And then in the video, she blew out the cake. Or the, no, she blew out the candles on the cake. Which... I think I can say with confidence, when you blow out the candles, and we didn't care about this 2 years ago, pre-COVID, but when you blow out the candles, you're essentially just spitting on a cake. And who's going to want to eat a slice of chocolate if it's got somebody else's spit all over it from their candle blow? For crying out loud. But again, what's good for thee is not for me, according to our beloved leaders. And then you have Justin Trudeau. He's a Canadian heartthrob. I mean, when you make your list of Canadian heartthrobs, you got Justin Trudeau and Alan Thicke and Alex Trebek and Norm MacDonald. Justin Trudeau, he wanted to show everybody just how inclusive he is. So, Justin, take it away.
I will never apologize for standing up for an LGBTQ2+ kids' rights.
That's a good one. That's a good piece of awesome. That's so good I want to hear it again.
I will never apologize for standing up for an LGBTQ2+ kids' rights.
Now, you would think that if he was truly down with that, that would just roll off the tongue because it'd just be part of his being. Maybe his face was constricted. I wonder if he's wearing blackface when he said that. Another blackface picture of Justin Trudeau surfaced just earlier this week. Goofball. All right, and then finally, that's all the awesome audio that I have, but I have a little bonus stuff for you here, too. You know, because as Pramila Jayapal was saying, global warming is such a problem, and as you know, cow farts contribute mightily. We are just finding out today that researchers are studying how to potty train cows to fight climate change. They said that this is from Animal Biology in Germany, and they said that they're looking for ways to train cows to go potty in a designated area that they could then cover up so that the methane won't continue to kill the planet. I say let the cows be free! Okay, I got to get out of here. Tom and Curly Show is coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. I'll see you back here tomorrow. Hi, Newt.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.